Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. Let's get straight to the docket. First, another Colorado man charged regarding his missing wife. We'll get details. Second, the news media and Crime Talk believes the judge in the Morphew matter got it wrong. I'll explain. Third, something you don't see every day. A kidnapped victim convinces a triple homicide suspect to surrender. And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. If you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button. Make sure you hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. Yes, we've taken a few weeks off because we were traveling and we had some other commitments, but tomorrow night, 6 p.m. Mountain Time, we will go live and we have a lot to discuss. Immediately following that, we will do our Patreon show as well. And if you haven't become a Patreon member, you should do so. You get videos that we put up to Patreon first, as well as when we go live, we can actually have a call-in show. So please do that. Now, please don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And if you can't watch us, you can always listen to us. You can download us on all Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audible. You can find us everywhere. Tell a friend as well. All right, let's get straight to the docket. Another Colorado man has been charged regarding the disappearance of his wife. There must be something in the water. I don't get it. Anyway, the Colorado Springs Police Department believes that the husband of a 2019 missing woman was strangled and then hid her body. 38-year-old Dane Oliver Kalungi, the husband of Jepsy Kalungi, was arrested this week and he was charged with first-degree murder. Police believe that this is a domestic violence disturbance that took place before Dane Kalungi killed his wife of 2 years. On April 4th, 2019, the Colorado Springs Police Department initiated a missing person case report for then 26-year-old Jepsy Kalungi. Police said the last time anyone had had contact with Jepsy was on March 20th of 2019. Now, there was talk about a legal separation, but they were in fact married at the time of this incident, according to the police. According to the Colorado Springs Police Department, there were numerous interviews and they executed 36 search warrants during this investigation. Dane Kalungi was arrested in Albuquerque, New Mexico, but the police say that he had moved to San Diego, California shortly after Jepsy went missing. The district attorney's office in El Paso County is in the process of extraditing Dane Kalungi back to stand trial. This is another interesting case for the reason that the prosecutors are going forward without the body of Jepsy. The police say that an investigation continues as to her location. Given the fact that there is no body and it's simply a belief that Jepsy was in fact strangled and then her body hidden, gives the defense a bit of a fighting chance in a case like this, because Dane Kalungi had always told the family that they were separated and that Jepsy either went back to the Philippines or was maybe somewhere in Chicago. It'll be interesting to see what information that the prosecutors and police feel that they have is sufficient to go forward without a body in this case. Next on the docket, the news media, as well as Crime Talk, believes that the Chaffee County District Court judge in the Barry Morphew matter got it wrong when he refused to grant release of the affidavit for the arrest warrant. Several news organizations have asked the Chaffee County District Court judge to reconsider his June 4th order sealing the 130-page arrest warrant for Barry Morphew. Now, the judge did note in his order that he said it is the lengthiest and most detailed affidavit for an arrest warrant that he has seen in his nearly 30 years of experience with criminal cases. The judge, Patrick Murphy, closed the record until at least September. He wrote that releasing the affidavit prior to an investigation conducted by Barry Morphew's defense attorneys could hamper their ability to effectively prepare a case. The judge also raised concerns in his order about the potential for harassment of the Morphew's two daughters and the affidavit's length, writing that redaction would be a time-consuming process and one the court cannot meaningfully complete without the input and involvement of both parties. But the news media argues that the affidavit's length and details contained in the document are not legitimate grounds to deny the public's presumptive right to inspect the affidavit. And we, here at Crime Talk, agree. So the Colorado Rules of Criminal Procedure have recently been changed to address this issue. Specifically, it's Rule 55.1. It actually went into effect on May 10th of this year, and it imposes a heightened burden on any party seeking to overcome the public's strong presumptive right to access to court records. Even if the affidavit contains extremely sensitive personal or private information unrelated to the prosecution's need for the arrest warrant, Rule 55.1 provides that such information may be redacted, but only upon a judicial finding that its disclosure would countervail some specified substantial interest. And attorneys for the news media argue that Barry Morphew's own investigation is not a substantial interest, according to the attorney's arguments, because criminal defendants are not required to produce any evidence from an investigation at trial. Their goal is to show that the prosecution's investigation was inadequate. Additionally, the party who is asking this court to deny the public its presumptive right to access court records, the defendant, in this case, Barry Morphew, should bear the burden of showing that the public disclosure of each page, each paragraph, each sentence, each word in the affidavit poses a substantial and real threat to his ability to prepare and present his defense. The attorneys for the press argue none of this has been done. I totally agree. The burden is on the defense to say why it should be done. And guess what? That's going to be time-consuming and expensive. And the court to simply say it's going to be too much work is not a rational basis to deny the release for the affidavit. There's nothing in the rule that simply says something's going to be time-consuming or burdensome, somehow suspends or the rule should be disregarded by the court simply because they don't have the time to do it. What is also interesting in this particular case is that the prosecutor is not objecting to the affidavit being released, which is always somewhat interesting because oftentimes it's the prosecutor that doesn't want the information released. Here, it's the defense. I cannot recall a single time that an affidavit has not been released to the public immediately here in the state of Colorado. Even with this new rule, I think the court, with all due respect, got it wrong in this particular case. And if the court denies the press's motion to have the affidavit released, hopefully it will be taken up on a writ directly to the Colorado Supreme Court and this issue can be resolved. The public has a right to public information when it can be reasonably made available. And in this particular case, the defense hasn't shown any evidence that it's going to prejudice them in any way. I think the court should reconsider, but I can tell you this. Most courts don't like to admit that they got it wrong and they're going to stand by their decision. We'll see if the judge has the courage to maybe change his mind. All right, let's take a quick recess before we continue with the docket. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever, but if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, something you normally don't see. That's right. The victim of a kidnapping convinces a man suspected of 3 murders in Oregon to surrender. The suspect in a triple murder in Oregon turned himself into police in Wisconsin early Sunday morning after a woman that he kidnapped convinced him to surrender. Owen Nicholson, 35, has been charged with first-degree murder, first-degree attempted murder, first-degree assault, and failure to perform duties of a driver to injured persons. Well, that's a scary one. Anyway, Nicholson is suspected of killing Charles Nicholson, 83, believed to be his father, inside a trailer at an RV park in North Bend, Oregon. He fled in Charles Nicholson's truck, striking Anthony Oyster, 74, and his wife, Linda Oyster, 73, on the way out. Anthony Oyster died of his injuries, and Linda Oyster is hospitalized in critical condition. Nicholson then went to a sporting goods store where he bought some more ammunition, and then he went to a marijuana dispensary where he shot and killed a 47-year-old clerk at the dispensary by the name of Jennifer Davidson. The police ultimately found the truck that Nicholson originally stole. It was on fire, and they couldn't find out exactly where he went. Well, Nicholson, during that time period, then kidnaps Laura Johnson from her workplace in Springfield, Oregon, who had gone out to pick up her lunch, and when she returned, Nicholson held her at gunpoint and told her to drive him to Wisconsin. That drive took some 33 hours to get there, but during that time, she was able to convince Nicholson to turn himself in. Nicholson will more than likely face kidnapping charges in the same county as well. Nicholson's also going to be extradited back to Oregon and deal with justice there. I'm glad that worked out, and this was not a quadruple murder suspect in this particular case. Strange stories. You just can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen. You just can't make this stuff up. And there's still no reason as to why he killed his father. Bizarre world, ladies and gentlemen. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day, and we're going to announce the winner from last week. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And I don't know if this guy's just dumb, maybe a little hot-headed, or just some really bad luck. But Omar Wright went through a Starbucks the other day, and guess what he wanted on his bagel? That's right, cream cheese. Apparently, it wasn't there. So what's the logical thing to do? I know, we've seen this before. Yell at the barista and threaten them with their life. That's right. That's what Mr. Wright did. Poor move indeed. And guess what's even dumber? The fact that whether you knew it or you didn't know it, but that the barista that you threatened with her life, her mom just happens to be the police chief. Ooh, bad judgment, bad. Ladies and gentlemen, I understand the world is getting back to normal. A lot of people have been stressed out, but we're talking about cream cheese, for goodness sakes. Let it go, all right? I am not a kumbaya, big group hug kind of guy, all right? But I think some things you just have to let go. And if you didn't get your cream cheese, what's the worst that happens? You park, go inside and say, I didn't get my cream cheese. Guess what? They're probably going to give you a free bagel the next time. So Omar Wright, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Now, if you, Mr. Wright, are selected to be the dumb criminal contestant winner of the week, that's right, you could win cool Crime Talk stuff, in this particular case, a mug. Now, our winner from last week, Mr. Moreno, remember, he was the gentleman that was being pleasured by a young woman backing up his truck, but unfortunately, it struck three people, killing one. Now, that was some of the dumbest things I could possibly imagine somebody doing, but you are a winner by popular vote, Mr. Moreno. The question is, do you deserve a mug since you actually killed somebody and you weren't just being stupid? I don't know. You all let me know if Mr. Moreno should get the mug. We'll vote on that one as well. All right. Thanks for watching. It's great to be back. Thanks. I want to thank everyone for taking the time to watch Crime Talk while we were on vacation. We tried to bring it to you. I know you could hear a kid in the swimming pool. I know sometimes the sound wasn't great. We were doing the best we could, ladies and gentlemen. But thanks for watching. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.